Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Gram laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Gram keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit lgusa.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Gram laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.
Welcome to the Boneyard with Steve Robertson. As always, I am your good friend and host, Steve Robertson. A little bit later than I wanted to be today. We had a baseball commitment earlier, so that was supposed to break at 5:30. Ended up breaking around 1 o'clock. We've got a football commitment situation that we're tracking, too. That may break while we're recording the show. If it does, I'll explain it to you. But I've already done the interview. I've already written the story. We're just waiting on the young man to announce his decision. And looks like we could have another commitment on the football side later this week. So, yeah, some good things are happening. A great time to be a member of jeanspage.com. Yeah, for sure. We'll keep you abreast of all that stuff. Had a couple baseball commitments break here in the last couple days. And so we're excited, you know. And that's the thing, too. We need something to feel good about, especially on the football side of things. So when we get some new commitments, I think it kind of calms the storm a little bit, because what happens when you see what we've had the last 2 weeks, people start thinking everything is falling apart, we're not going to be able to recruit well, and then all of a sudden you pick up a couple of good football commitments. You know, we got Demarius Yates earlier this week for 2026, but you know, that'd be if things go as expected, and things can always change. I mean, we're dealing with young people that sometimes are very impressionable, but to think about that if we pick up three commitments a week after that debacle of performance last Saturday, it tells me, number one, we're doing a good job recruiting, and number two, it tells me that young people out there aren't as down on Mississippi State as some of our fans are. Now, it's a different emotional investment. Let's just kind of call it for what it is, right? You know, they see opportunity. You know, we're not getting to go play, right? You know, we don't get to go out there and run around and pick up some NIL dollars and then have a chance to go play college football. You know, we're there just kind of as observers, not casual observers, but invested observers. And so, yeah, we don't get a say in that. You know, we don't get to block a pass. We don't get to go out there and lay down a bunt or shoot a free throw. None of that is on the agenda for us. But when you see other people, it's like, okay, well, maybe things are going to be okay. Maybe not this year, but things are going to be okay. So this kind of keep you up to date there. So, yeah, I do think that this one commitment today is going to happen this evening. So if it happens after our show, and hopefully it doesn't go into tomorrow. But, again, the story is written. The interview has already taken place. The graphic that we make has already been provided for this young man. So we expect that to happen. And, again, if it happens before I'm done recording this show, we'll just break down the commitment, right? It is a very significant commitment. As the one we're expecting later in the week, another significant commitment. So we'll just kind of lay it out there for what it is. You know, a lot of people I know that are kind of chasing these stories too. But no matter who breaks the story, and we always hope to, any good news right now on the Mississippi State football front is a good thing for all involved. So that's kind of how we are. Hey, let's thank our friends at Bulldog Burger Company, longtime sponsors of this show. I love Bulldog Burger Company. I plan to be in there this week at some point. I'm jonesing, man. I need to get in there and get some spring rolls. I've slept pretty good as of late, but at the same time, too, I can tell that I'm aging a little bit, and so I want to be able to kind of turn back the hands of time a little bit. I got to get those spring rolls. I got to get those in the system, right? You need to have the spring rolls, too, because I want you to be equally as beautiful, if not more beautiful. Some of us, it is more of an effort, but it takes a lot of work to look this cool and be this beautiful. Big part of that is the spring rolls. Some of you, too, have been slacking on your spring rolls, I can tell. You've been cheating on us and eating somewhere else, and it shows. It shows. I'm going to be your friend here and be honest with you. You need to get back into Bulldog Burger Company and get those spring rolls in front of you. Maybe even get an order for yourself. Get the four spring rolls for you. Some of you may need a double order, okay? I'm just being honest, right? Once you get those spring rolls, polish that off with a great restaurant-quality hamburger. I'm thinking Smokehouse when I go next time. That's kind of been on my mind. I'm thinking Smokehouse. Maybe you want the Mission. When I get the Mission, I get the Pico de Gallo on the side. You know my policy about uncooked onions. You may feel differently, and that's okay. And then, of course, that chocolate shake, that Nutella shake for the ride home. That's a nice palate cleanser, too. It truly is. Be sure and check that out. Three great locations to serve you. University Drive in Stark Vegas, Gloucester Street there in Tupelo, Lake Harbor Drive in the Ridge and Flowood area. Go by and let them know you're there to put your feet under their table, because Bulldog Burger Company is a place where people go to meet. M-E-A-T. All right, it's Wednesday. You know what Wednesday is, right? Wednesday is our team preview day. We looked at Florida back during the summer, and we discussed, hey, man, it was a real possibility they could show up in Starkville 1-2. You know, the pressure'd be on them. Well, that's the case. We haven't held up our end of the deal, but this Florida script has kind of gone as we envisioned it. But let's take a quick look back, shall we? Okay, so they open up the year at home against Miami, and they got absolutely crushed, 41-17 in that game. Terrible. Bounce back the next week, and they beat Samford 45-7. Last weekend, they get shelled again. Of course, they had the lightning delay and things like that. That did little to help matters in Gainesville. A&M rolls 33-20. The final score is not truly indicative of how great A&M was in this game. It was 20-0 at the break, and then they kind of traded touchdowns there in the third quarter, and then, you know, Florida scores the final touchdown in the fourth quarter there to, there's like 3 minutes left or 5 minutes left, you know, and so the game, for all intents and purposes, was over. But Texas A&M, really from start to finish, controlled this game. I think everybody kind of sees it for what it is. And so now here they are, 1-2. Their first road game of the year is the 11 a.m. kick in Starkville. Now, here's the thing. I've talked to some former players, and there are varying opinions about all of this, about, hey, who does the advantage favor with an 11 a.m. kick? Well, the first thing that normally happens is the crowd is not nearly as rowdy, so the home field advantage is not nearly as prevalent when you play at 11 a.m. When you've got all day to get there, you got all day to tailgate, you got all day to maybe enjoy an adult beverage or two. I know none of you drink more than two. But the crowd has a tendency to get a little rowdier. And more times than not, you're coming and you're going to spend the night, Saturday night. And so it's difficult, too. We have so many families, you know, that have high school age kids. And so maybe, you know, your son is playing high school football. Maybe your child is in the band. Maybe you've got a cheerleader in your family or somebody on the dance team. And so there are some family and school functions that have to be attended on Friday, and it makes it a little more difficult for some people to get here. And so as a result, the crowds are typically smaller at 11 a.m., and the crowds are typically a little less boisterous at 11 a.m. So in that respect, that favors the visiting team. We've been on the other side of that too. But that said, it's still difficult to go play on the road. I've had another former player tell me he hated the 11 a.m. kick on the road because of the fact, you know, you get there, you travel, and it's like you don't know where anything is. And even though they try to make it as routine as possible, you're unfamiliar with the surroundings. It's a little more difficult thing. You got to get up even earlier on Saturday morning because you got to go through all your stuff, right? You got to go get taped up, got to get through breakfast. The next thing you know, you're on the field. And so you don't have all day to kind of get your mind right on top of having to travel. So in that respect, if that's true, that favors the home team because, hey, you know where the weight room is. You know where the training room is. You know, that nobody's having to make any special concessions to kind of set up a makeshift, you know, facility for you. You're in your bed, you know. And so in that respect, it helps. But, you know, you can run the numbers all you want. You know, a lot of times when Mississippi State has pulled off an upset on the road, it's been a day game in the SEC, typically. Occasionally, it's a different story. But so the timing of itself, I think, again, we need you to be here. If you can get here at all, we need you to be here. That's an important part of things for us, is to have you here, cowbells in hand. And I want to really, really shout out our students. I love all of you. You guys are like my sons and daughters in many respects. And I have a son that is among your number. You know, it seems like goodness now for the last several years, I've had a member of my family, a carrier of my DNA, in the student section, you know. And so I understand maybe a little bit better than most. The commitment for you guys, a lot going on weekends, right? What you really want is to come in there and just have a great time with your friends and watch Mississippi State win a game. These are the days that last forever, right? I mean, these are the days that really matter to us. You look back in hindsight and say, you know what, hey, I had a great time. I remember that game. I was there with my friends. We had our signs, or we had our cowbells, and I still got that sticker. You know, it's special to me. Those things are important. So last weekend, our students turned out. Many of them were gone by halftime, and I kind of understand that too. But for those of you that stayed, you get a gold star from me. So I know it's an 11 a.m. game. I get it. I understand. But we need you there. So please go to bed earlier on Friday night. Or maybe just stay up all night and come to the game, take a nap Saturday afternoon. Makes no difference to me, but we need you there. Because the students, not only are you guys the future of our fan base, you're really kind of the lifeblood of our athletic venues. You are the ones at times that kind of get everybody going. And I depend on you guys, too, to make sure that a field goal or an extra point is good or not good. More so than the officials. You guys know before they do. So your response kind of helps me, right? So thank you for that. But let's take a look here at kind of what's going right for Florida and what's going wrong. Now, I spent some time on the Florida message board today. The welcome wagon over there wasn't quite what you'd expect it to be, but it's been okay. You know, this guy's doing a good job at Swamp 247. But let's look at some numbers here for Florida. Now, you know they have had to employ kind of a two-quarterback system. You know, Graham Mertz returned this year as the most accomplished SEC quarterback. And he gets a concussion in the Miami game, sits out the Samford game, and then DJ Lagway takes over. And last week, both quarterbacks played. Billy Napier said on Monday that both quarterbacks are expected to play this week. All right, Florida, not really lighting the woods on fire offensively or defensively. And maybe that's a good thing for us. But I'm going to have a tough time picking us, to be honest with you, because I think Florida's got a different brand of athlete. And if I'm playing Mississippi State, I'm just going to line up and run the football until they prove to me they can't stop it. I mean, you didn't stop Toledo. Why would you stop Florida? I hate to be negative, but that's just the reality of it. Florida scoring 27.3 points a game, allowing 27 points a game. That's not great. They've scored 82. They've allowed 81. This could end up being a shootout, guys. I mean, honest to goodness, this could be an absolute shootout. This could be the most entertaining game of the year because they're not great defensively either. And they've had some struggles on offense. It may boil down to, hey, you know, which offense can kind of catch fire. And hopefully that's us. Now, the last 2 weeks doesn't give you any evidence that you should suggest, if I can get it out, that it's going to be us. But I sometimes feel like we're just kind of sitting back, just kind of waiting for that offense to explode. Jeff Lebby has always done well offensively. And I think this game could be entertaining. I don't think it's a blowout either way. I think it's going to be one of those games that goes down to the fourth quarter. But at looking first downs here, Florida has earned 58 and allowed 67, just 22 on the ground. So they, haven't been especially skilled in running the football, and that's kind of been Billy Napier's staple. When he was at UL Lafayette, there were some times he was among the national leaders in running the football. There was one time they had nearly three running backs, some of them have about 1,000 yards when he was in Lafayette. But so far, through three games, they've ran for 357 yards. Now, we're not doing any better than that. But this is not a Florida ground game that has found its stride yet. Now, they've allowed 515 yards rushing. So you're getting outrushed by 160 yards through three games. That's pretty significant. And it also allows the opponents to kind of dictate terms to you. Marcel Reed from A&M really gave them trouble last week. From a passing standpoint, not a lot to really get excited about either. They're 51 of 83 with five touchdowns and five interceptions. When you have thrown as many interceptions as you have touchdowns, it's not going to be a good year. If that trend continues, Billy Napier absolutely will not be there at the end of the year. There are some people that are forecasting if they lose this ball game this weekend, he could be fired as early as Monday. So we'll see. Average attempt is just over 10 yards, and they get 279 yards per game. When you look at the total offensive numbers, and kind of switching back here, 59 of 86 for opponents. They've thrown one pick, 236 yards a game, and they've matched Florida with five touchdowns. Total offense, not been great. not been great. They've only run 170 plays. And again, when you get behind and people can run the football and shorten the game on you, they shorten your ability to impact the game offensively. And that's what's happened to Florida. You haven't played well offensively. You can't sustain drives. And other teams have been able to control time of possession. They're getting right at 400 yards in offense. They're giving up 407. They've scored 11 touchdowns, allowed 10. Again, these are the numbers that kind of reflect somebody being 1-2. Punt game has been decent. They had a lot of practice with that. They have punted 11 times this year with an average of 46.36. Maybe Kevin Coleman can get one. They've attempted 2 field goals, made them both. Their opponents have attempted 7 and made 4. And that's not because they've been blocked. They just missed. Penalties have been a bit of an issue. You know, 16 per game. That's not going to work. Most of them have been, you know, smaller penalties, you know, pre-snap and that sort of stuff. But they have kind of shot themselves in the foot with some of that. Time of possession, averaging just over 24 minutes a game. The opponents, nearly 36 minutes a game. So, again, it kind of stands to reason. Third down conversions have been abysmal for Florida. 8 of 29. Just over 27% third down conversion ratio. And our defense at times has struggled. So, something's got to give. And we haven't been great on third down. And they've been terrible on third down. You know, somebody's going to get a win there. Opponents, 16 of 38, not terrible, but 42% conversion ratio for opponents. They've gone for it 7 times on fourth down, and Florida's been stuffed 4 times, converted 3 times. They've allowed 2 of 2 on fourth down conversions. Florida's fumbled the football 3 times, only lost it once. 5 sacks. They've allowed 5 sacks. They've generated 5 sacks. Sounds kind of familiar, right? Perfect on PATs all the way around. When they've gotten in the red zone, they've been good, and it's usually a touchdown. When they get down close, they typically score. 8 of 10 red zone scores and 7 of those 8 touchdowns, touchdown variety. Look at some individual numbers here. We'll start with you ever Googled yourself? You may be alarmed to know exactly how much of your private information and data is out there for anybody to access. Whether it be your phone number, your home address, or details about your family, could be your kids' names, their ages, whether you agree to this disclosure or not. And that's because data brokers are collecting and selling your information to marketers, scammers, and basically anyone willing to pay. It's the reason robocallers know your name, and while ads seem to follow you on every digital platform out there. Well, Aura fights back for you. They remove your personal data from broker sites and keep it off. Aura also alerts you fast if your information shows up in a data breach or on the dark web. But Aura is more than just data broker removal. It's a full digital security suite that protects every part of your life online. Aura gives you a VPN to stay private, antivirus to block threats, a password manager to keep all your logins safe. They even give you spam call protection to cut off those stupid scammers. Aura also scans the dark web regularly for your most sensitive information, like your social security number, bank logins, passwords, and they will notify you instantly if you are somehow exposed. If your identity is ever stolen, you're backed up by up to $5 million in insurance and 24/7 U.S.-based fraud support to help you recover everything quickly. Other services charge about the same, but they only cover one or two areas. With Aura, you get it all. Data broker removal, credit and identity monitoring, device protection, and fraud support, all with one simple app. Aura removes what is already exposed, protects what isn't, and puts you back in control. Right now, you can try Aura free for 14 days when you visit aura.com/remove. That gives them plenty of time to go ahead and start protecting your data. They can remove your personal information from data broker sites. Sign up today at aura.com/remove and get the peace of mind that your privacy, identity, and finances are all safeguarded. That's Aura, aura.com/remove. Certain terms and conditions apply. Be sure and check it out today at aura.com.
Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Graham laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Graham keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit LGUSA.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Gram laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.
Passing stuff. You know, DJ Lagway is more of a run-first quarterback, but he's not just an athlete playing quarterback. He does have an arm that can get you. Very good in the vertical passing game. He's not just a dink and dunk guy. This is their future, so they believe. Played in all three games this year. His quarterback rating is 181. So 27 of 44. He has thrown three picks to go along with four touchdowns, 541 yards, which actually leads the team. And that's a freshman coming in out of Texas. Graham Mertz played in two games. Didn't play against Samford. 23 of 35, two picks, and just a one touchdown. His completion percentage is better, just about 66%, but just 286 yards. He's not airing it out nearly as much. They also had Aiden Warren throw a pass, too. A couple passes, actually. He's one of two for just 10 yards. I don't expect him to be a factor in the ballgame. Let's look at the rushing numbers here. Montrell Johnson, a lot of people expected him to have a really big year this year. It hasn't materialized so far. 33 attempts for just 166 yards, but he's averaging 5 yards a carry. That could be a real factor with us. You know, he's a physical runner, three touchdowns. He does have the long of 71. So you think about that for a second. You back a 71 out of that, and you're right there with 95 yards, 32 carries for 95 yards. So outside of the one big play, it's just kind of been, you know, 3 yards in a cloud of dust. Treyon Webb, 13 attempts for 52 yards. Outside of that, there's really not anything to speak of. DJ Lagway ran 13 times for 16 yards. That's the net. So, again, this ground game not really getting going here. Receiving numbers, and this is where I think Florida always has athletes. Like, yeah, you always think Florida has linebackers, DBs, and wide receivers. Always. Leading receiver right now is Elijah Badger. He has 11 grabs on the year for 260 yards and a touchdown. The leading receiver from a catch standpoint is Eugene Wilson, 13 grabs for 191 yards. Again, they've thrown just five touchdowns, and that's been kind of evenly distributed. You have five players that have caught a touchdown pass. But nobody has really just kind of taken the ball and run with it, no pun intended. Nobody has kind of become the bell cow there. But, again, a handful of guys kind of in the rotation there, and Wilson and Badger will be the guys that we're kind of paying special attention to. And those are veteran guys too. These are not just, you know, newcomers who are trying to make it. Eugene Wilson's a sophomore, but Elijah Badger, a senior, you know, for sure. What's interesting too, I think the tight end can be a real factor in this game for either team. And we have had some success here as of late with the tight end. We think Sadu Traore is a guy that has NFL potential, you know. So Justin Ball's done some good things too. We'll get things going. Defensively, and you think with a team that's been on the field as much as they have, they'd have somebody up there just really kind of leading the charge. Guys, Isaac Smith has almost as many tackles as the top three guys. As a matter of fact, I think he has more than the top three guys combined at Florida. Now, granted, they're playing a lot of people trying to find some solutions. And then Ron Roberts, former UL Lafayette defensive coordinator, he was the guy that interviewed for a job with us some time ago. But they've changed the play caller on defense last week, and it did not pay any dividends. But Jordan Castell, Grayson Howard, Jaden Robinson tied with 13 tackles apiece that leads a team. We mentioned the five sacks. That's not a huge number, right? But the leader on the team is Tariq Sapp, who has two. That's a redshirt junior edge defender out of St. Thomas Aquinas in Fort Lauderdale High School. I've been there. But you look at these numbers, and it's like, you know, this looks like a team that's struggling. You haven't found an identity on offense, and you haven't found maybe a bell cow on defense. Those things are interesting to me. And you would think, you know, 3 years into this thing, you would have an identity, and they don't. They do have 14 quarterback hurries, so they are getting to the passer a little bit, even when they can't get him on the ground. We mentioned earlier just the five sacks there. One of the things I love to look at when we're talking, guys, is special team stuff, because I think in games like this, special teams really matter. mentioned against Toledo, we probably have an opportunity to return some kicks. Well, we did, and more opportunity than we wanted. Does that make sense? Yeah. Now, from a punting standpoint, we mentioned Jeremy Crawshaw with 46.3 on the punts average. He's got long of 61. The placement's been good. He's also been a guy distance-wise. He's got four kicks over 50. He's pinned seven inside the 20. He's had three fair catches. Clearly a very talented guy. But perhaps we can get a situation where they outkick the coverage, provided we can get some stops and give Coleman a chance to kind of shorten the field. We talked about what a weapon he was after Eastern Kentucky. He made life so much easier. And people are aware. People watch tape. They're like, hey, let's just kick it 40 yards in the air and rather than 45 or 50, and we can negate the return. Trace Mack is a field goal kicker there. And, again, he's 2 for 2 on the year with a long of 41. Kickoffs. Now, we hope Florida's not kicking off much. They've kicked off 15 times this year, and 10 of those have been touchbacks. And so, and you know, 66%, you don't need to do the math. But one in every three kickoffs is returnable. Maybe that gives us an opportunity there. You know, we'll see. And they've been pretty good in the return game, pretty good. Not great. Shamir Dyke averaging 13 yards a punt return on the kickoff side of things. Jaden Ball with 30-yard average, and Treyon Webb with 28. But only five returns on the year. And we've done a really good job of negating the return. I think our special teams have been pretty good. And the fact that we're having to point that out kind of gives you an idea, kind of a barometer of how our season is going. But, again, I look at this team, and it's like they look a lot like us. And you'd say, you know what, Steve, you know, toss-up games, as you say, tend to favor the home team. I think that helps a little bit. I just worry about the talent differential between us and them. I've talked about attrition numbers on the last show. You know, Florida's had some attrition too. And Florida's had you know, some losses late in recruiting. And that's one of the things that I thought, you know, when Joe Moorhead was fired, Billy Napier was my first choice. Now, in hindsight, that seems a little silly. You say, but Steve, that was an L. I really don't think it would have been. And let me tell you why. I think the natural progression of a coach's career, like if Billy Napier had left UL Lafayette, a place where they had won championships and done some really good things, and if he had gone to Mississippi State, I think with his offense, you know, the running quarterback, the RPO, you know, you want to grind it out, you want to run, you want to find some linemen, I think that we would have been able to recruit to his scheme in our natural recruiting footprint with ease. I thought he was a great fit. In many respects, kind of picks up from the Mullen tree. Makes sense to me. You know, Billy Napier runs some of the same concepts that Dan Mullen ran that were so successful here at Mississippi State. A lot of zone read. I thought we could have done it. And also, too, you know, the recruiting footprint for Mississippi State. You know, we have made our bread and butter over the years with small-town Mississippi kids. That's not to say we hadn't had some great ones, some Alabama and some from Louisiana, some from Tennessee. But it's traditionally been the border states. You know, we tip into Georgia every now and again and get a kid that pays off for us, too. But the level you got to recruit at Mississippi State to win is different than it is in Florida. And that was one of the things that kind of concerned me. I thought Billy, because of the fact that I thought his scheme was solid, would be fine at Florida. But I knew the recruiting piece was going to be a real challenge for him. When you recruit to Mississippi State, you know, more times than not, you're competing against Ole Miss. Sometimes a little bit of Auburn. Maybe a little bit of Arkansas, some South Carolina. You're competing against your contemporaries. So the jump in recruiting from UL Lafayette, where you're kind of competing against Louisiana Monroe and maybe Southern Miss, Louisiana Tech, and now you go to Florida, where the demands to recruit are as high as anywhere in the country. And so you got to go beat Florida State and Miami and Georgia. And I think there is a different skill set required to recruit at that level, and not just from the head coach. You know, when you bring coaches with you, and he brought a lot of his staff with him, when you bring coaches with you that they're used to going into Louisiana high schools And if kids aren't going to LSU, all of a sudden you have made UL Lafayette kind of the number two, right? You're the school of choice, unless you get a real academic kid that wants to go to Tulane. But when you get kids just want to go compete and play football and have a chance to win championships, if they're not quite good enough to go to LSU, those kids were going to Louisiana Lafayette because you had built a brand within the Bayou State. Well, you go to Florida, and I remember this. I won't tell you the coach. I remember when Dan Mullen's staff went. I had a former Mississippi State assistant coach that I happened to see in town. And he had his orange polo shirt on with that big blue F. Walked up, said hello, thanked for all I'd done for him over the years, wished us the best. I said, best of luck to you, coach, except against Mississippi State. And I said, to be fair to you, I hope y'all don't sign any kids from Mississippi, you know. And he pointed that logo, and he goes, that logo right there opens doors for us that weren't open at Mississippi State. And there's probably some truth in that. But that said, I thought it was kind of an interesting statement. And I think they kind of recruited at Florida with kind of that same level of arrogance. It's like, hey, we're Florida. Kids should just come here. And if you remember, a lot of people thought Malik Heath was going to flip from State to Florida. Stephen Guidry was going to flip from State to Florida. None of those guys did. In fact, nobody flipped from State to Florida other than the Evan McPherson and then the lineman, I can't remember. But it was pretty rare. And none of those kids are Mississippi kids. And I think Billy Napier probably didn't pay as close attention to the struggles Dan Mullen and his crew had on the recruiting trail. And so when you show up down there, when you go from Lafayette, Louisiana to Gainesville, Florida, there is an intensity on the recruiting trail that has to change to meet the expectation. You're recruiting nationally when you're at Florida. You got to do well at home, but you're going to be competing head-to-head with Alabama, Georgia, Tennessee for these kids. It's a much different dynamic than it would have been at Mississippi State. And Billy Napier, despite some rumors to the contrary, and I remember there was one guy in particular that, you know, and then after he got caught lying, came out and said, oh, I was a consultant. You were a clown, that's what you were, an absolute clown. And so Billy Napier did not want to be in the SEC West. And it's not just a Mississippi State thing. He never interviewed with us. He took a preliminary call from us, refused to sit down with us. He did the same thing to Ole Miss. He did the same thing to Arkansas. He didn't do that to South Carolina. He interviewed for the South Carolina job, didn't get the job, and then ultimately lands in Florida. And in many respects, you can say, hey, from a financial standpoint, that was a great thing for him because he's never going to have to work again a day in his life unless he just wants to. And he's young enough that maybe he'll get tired of playing golf or whatever, but he's going to get a huge payday from Florida whenever they fire him. And so, yeah, I turned down Mississippi State. Interview. He never got an offer. Turned down Ole Miss, turned down Arkansas, didn't get a job at South Carolina, but I land at Florida, so I fall forward, and they're going to have to pay me, what is it, in excess of $20 million to watch me leave? Yeah, good work if you can get it, right? But I can tell you, those people in Florida want him gone. And why wouldn't they? And, Scott Strickland, of course, Bulldog alum, former AD here at State. This is the thing that, he's kind of got to wear. But on paper, Billy Napier seemed to be the G5 guy of choice. But I think the recruiting piece has kind of been his undoing. I've had so many people that know Billy Napier well that have told me, as far as his preparation, as far as his attention to detail, the things he looks for in film review and things they can exploit, is elite. The guy's a heck of a football coach. But he just doesn't have the horses, it appears, to compete at the level that's required at Florida. And you know what? They're 1-2 in year three. And again, there were people last year that wanted Napier gone. And you start running the numbers on this thing. And, Florida is ready to be Florida again. And, Steve Spurrier changed the level of expectations. And we were all part of it. And let's be honest with ourselves. Except when Florida wasn't playing Mississippi State, we loved to watch Florida. I loved to see them win. Like when they won the NAFL championship, how incredible that was. It's like, this is a great thing. This is a great thing. But when you can, think about the expectations that they had, it really, in many respects, made things a lot more different for the subsequent coaches. And then, of course, they end up getting Urban Meyer, and then they have a return to glory. And we played a couple against those teams. You know, we played a couple of Urban Meyer teams when Dan Mullen was here. But, I mean, you go back and look at the Napier file here. His first year at UL Lafayette, they go 7-6 in a regular season. You say, but Steve, it's 13 games. Well, they played in the conference championship game. They lose their bowl game. So 7-7. So 500, even though they were 5-3 in their conference and played really well, in year two, in 2019, they went 11-3. One of those losses was to Mississippi State. Or was that 18? We beat them in 18, yeah. But 2019, they go 11-3 and 7-1. And they win their bowl game. 2020, the abbreviated year, they go 10-1. Then they win their bowl game and finish ranked 15th in the country. In 2021, they go 12-1, undefeated in their conference, and they win their bowl game. I guess the bowl game didn't get played. But you see a natural progression of things, right? Billy Napier lost five games in three seasons at UL Lafayette. And so, yeah, on paper, this makes great sense. There's a little more to it. He gets to Florida, 6-6 the first year. They lose a bowl game, end up 6-7. Last year, 5-7, and then 1-2. So he is 12-16 in less than three seasons at Florida. Guys, in 4 years at Lafayette, he was 40-12. So he has already lost four more games in 2 years and 3 weeks at Florida than he did at Louisiana Lafayette. And so, yeah, there's no way this guy's getting a fourth year barring some miraculous turnaround. And my hope is it certainly doesn't start this weekend in Starkville. But I have a tough time thinking we're going to build a matchup athletically with them. Somebody asked me today, what do you think? I think Florida wins the game. And I hate that. And I'd love to be wrong about that because I want us to get a win and maybe still have a puncher's chance to get to a bowl game. But there just haven't been a lot of evidence yet to kind of support that. But yeah, I still think it's going to be a very entertaining game. If we look up and this thing is 38-35 with a minute to go, I won't be the least bit surprised. All right, it's time for today's Top 10 List. As always, brought to you by closewithblair.com. That's C-L-O-S-E with Blair. B-L-A-I-R, just like it sounds, right? Blair is our collective friend in the mortgage industry. Before I forget, let me give you his phone number. 601-500-2344. That rings directly to Blair, okay? Not to a call center, not to a receptionist. You get the man himself. 23 years of experience, and with his level of expertise, the chances are he can get you to the closing table when so many can't, right? He knows how to structure loans to get them through underwriting. A lot of people out there competing for your mortgage business. You could entrust it to just about anybody. It may be a mistake. You may get in a bad deal and pay more points than you need to. And you say, Steve, what are points? Well, Blair can explain that to you, right? There are some adult decisions that require some adult know-how. And that's Blair Chandler. Top 1% close ratio in the industry, in the country, back-to-back-to-back years. So if you're looking for your first home, maybe a game day condo, maybe you're looking to refinance, federal interest rates went down today. So Blair can kind of keep you abreast of all that stuff. And if you're looking for your first home, let's get pre-qualified, okay? You get the pre-qualification letter. You know exactly what you're looking for. You're not shopping above your means. We've got some great real estate agents in the Mississippi State family that can assist you. Great people. But in order to make their jobs easier, let's get that pre-qualification letter. Again, at 601-500-2344. And let Blair know you heard about him on the Boneyard. He has closed several loans for several Boneyard listeners. Okay, we had a request some time ago. I was looking back through my notes. And somebody said, hey, Steve, some of my favorite classic rap songs from classic artists come from classic rock. They sampled classic rock. And you know what? That's true. You know, sampling used to be a big thing. I was in a band that sampled too. And sampling was kind of noisy back then. But a lot of people basically sampled other songs. And eventually they said, hey, this is copyrighted material. Now, one of the songs that I didn't put on here because of the fact, and it's probably the greatest sample of a generation, It's not necessarily a rock song. It's, you know, MC Hammer sampled Super Freak from Rick James on You Can't Touch This. And really because of that infectious bass line. I've watched the Rick James documentary. If you have not, let me encourage you to do so. Kind of a tragic tale in many respects. But some people, happiness kind of eludes them. And Rick James is one of those people. You know, he had a lot of problems in his life, some of his own making. But that was an incredible song that took MC Hammer to new heights. You could also argue Too Legit to Quit, Pumps and a Bump, Pumps and a Bump. We Like the Girls with a Pumps and a Bump. Yeah, there we go. All right, so here we go. Top 10 classic rap songs that sampled classic rock songs. Now, our first one, I wanted to get this band in here because they sampled a lot and sampled some interesting tracks. This is one of them. This is one of them. And I don't know that I would consider this rock song that was sampled a classic rock song, but the band itself, a classic. But it's Public Enemy's She Watched Channel Zero. They sampled Angel of Death from Slayer. And I guess I should say it's Slayer, right? It's Angel of Death from Slayer. It's sampled by Public Enemy. Number 9, and Run DMC kind of built a career on this, sampling other people's music, and that's nothing wrong with it. It was just kind of, you know, common custom at the time. Run DMC with It's Tricky sampled The Knack's My Sharona. Maybe you've heard of that. What's interesting, too, is there's a lot of people that are big Knack fans. I really only knew the one song. Number 8, it's Ice Cube's When Will They Shoot? Now, let me go ahead and give you a language warning for the entire list. You probably don't want to listen to this list in your car with your kids. So I'm going to give you a work warning right here and a child warning. And this is one of those songs that is very explicit in its lyrical content. But there's a segment where they sample Queen's We Will Rock You. And if you like Ice Cube and like NWA, you're going to like it. It's in that same vein, right? It's before Ice Cube was doing family movies. Number 7, my favorite Ghetto Boy song is My Mind Is Playing Tricks On Me. I saw a list a while back that My Mind Is Playing Tricks On Me was probably the number 5 rap song of all time. I love it, man. I do. But that's not the song we're going with. We're going with Gangster of Love, another song that has extremely explicit lyrics. And, of course, they sample Steve Miller's, you know, The Joker. You know, some call me the gangster of love. Well, they used it too. But again, it is extremely explicit. Number 6, it's Ice-T's Midnight. I love Ice-T, man. Long before, you know, he was Detective Tutuolo on SUV, Law & Order, which is the best. You know, before he was Scotty Appleton, you know, the somewhat shady detective in New Jack City. Ice-T was a rapper from the streets of Los Angeles. Also, side project Body Count. Yeah, it's true. A song called Midnight, they sample a kind of obscure Black Sabbath track, and maybe you didn't know that, but this is, to me, kind of, while it's not as well known as some other Ice-T tracks, it is classic Ice-T. Ice-T, one of my favorite rappers of all time, partially because I can understand him. Right, maybe he didn't have the lyrical flow of an Eminem, but Ice-T was in many respects one of the pioneers of the genre, and a lot of it too is because Ice-T had something to say. Very intelligent individual. Number 5, and let's go ahead and give you another explicit warning lyric here. This is off a legendary album in the rap genre. It's 2 Live Crew's As Nasty As They Wanna Be. And this is an album that led to some real challenges about the First Amendment in the United States. Record stores, a lot of people began banning it. They put explicit lyrical stickers on these albums. It was a Tipper Gore dream, you know, to sticker these albums. And then, of course, they wouldn't allow anybody to come to shows. They were under 18, and then they said under 21. And there was a lot of things about the 2 Live Crew and Luther Campbell that upset a lot of people. But here's the thing that I don't think people understand about the First Amendment. The First Amendment is there to protect offensive speech. That's what it's intended for. What if you don't like it, you don't have to listen to it. It's not there to protect tame speech. There would be no need for First Amendment protections if people spoke in a way that everybody appreciated and understood. The First Amendment is there for you to say things that are outlandish. Now, there's some decorum that goes along with that, and that's one of the reasons that you have the warning labels on albums back when we used to buy those. Now everybody just downloads them, but they still give you the E, like the lyrical content is E for explicit. But you may remember Bruce Springsteen signed over the rights, the recording rights to his song Born in the USA, because Two Live Crew recorded a single called Banned in the USA. And that's because people in music that create art do not want their rights infringed upon. So this was an important album. And it's probably one of the most outlandish albums and downright filthy albums that you have ever heard in your life. Even to this day, if I ever put this album on, I'm like, I cannot believe that they promoted and produced this, you know, back in a time when the country was a lot more conservative. But it's there's even a dirty word in the title, so I'm going to be very careful how we do this. But it's the F Shop. The F Shop samples both Van Halen and Guns N' Roses in the song. Shout out to Brother Marquise. Number four, one of my favorite rap groups of all time. And one of the coolest vibes of a song, and they kind of lifted a bass line from a really chill song from Lou Reed. Yeah, it's Tribe Called Quest's Can I Kick It? And again, they sample Walk on the Wild Side by Lou Reed. Little did we know. But all these years later, people are still talking about A Tribe Called Quest's Can I Kick It? And again, it kind of goes back a long time now, nearly 80 years now. Number three. It was kind of a requirement of people in my age bracket when we were in high school. You had to have Beastie Boys' debut album, License to Ill. And the Beastie Boys were so incredibly respected within the rap community. You can go back and look, you know, there's some old videos that have been uploaded of some live performances during the Beastie Boys' heyday. Extremely talented individuals. One of the best songs on that album is Rhyming and Stealing, and they sample Led Zeppelin's When the Levee Breaks. And the Beasties did a lot of sampling, a ton of sampling. And again, not being critical of them, that's how music was made in those days. And here's kind of a surprise song. You might not even know the song, but it was huge. And I also have a personal connection because the band that I was in used to open for Kuiper and their band regularly. I mentioned these guys recently too, you know, Jason Hayes and Jamie and those guys were great. Jamie Hewlin. They were the backup band. And if you saw Kuiper at Kathmandu's back in 91, I was there. It was the last show on the tour. And the band Pastel backed up Kuiper. They were Kuiper's traveling band. And the big hit was a great track called Tic-Tac-Toe, and of course they sampled Owner of a Lonely Heart from Yes. And it works. And of course there's some drug references in the track. You know, of course there's some, you know, Casual Encounters references in the track, because Tic-Tac-Toe is a game I used to play. Yeah. It's X and O. And if you know, you know. But number one, arguably the best rock sample song of all time, in my estimation, and it's a song that everybody knows, it's Tone Loc's Wild Thing, and they sampled Jamie's Crying from Van Halen. So how about that? Interesting top 10 list today, right? And so if you like those songs, and again, the thing that I suggest, there's a lot of people today is say, well, you know, rap and country are very similar, and they're really not. They're not. Now, some of these modern day country artists are kind of using some tracks and things like that to make kind of sound a little more modern. But rap and rock were kind of music of the rebels. They were the soundtrack of people that were nonconformist. It's not a country thing. I know some people would try to suggest that. It's not. Rock and rap have had a marriage over the years. You go back to the Run DMC Aerosmith collaboration with Walk This Way. It was tremendous. And I think one of the most important songs in my generation is when Public Enemy and Anthrax got together and covered Bring the Noise. And I think it was like, it was kind of introducing, you know, to kind of white America, hey, rap is cool too. It's okay to listen to rap. And I think it's one of those things too. I mean, there were so many young people that were buying these albums a lot of times because they had the stickers, because they felt like these people had something to say. So here you had Anthrax, one of the greatest thrash bands of all time, and then Public Enemy. And of course, you know, Chuck D and from Public Enemy and Be Real from Cypress Hill, they go out occasionally with the guys in Rage Against the Machine, and they do a little act called Prophets of Rage. You can check out that material wherever you download music. So there you go. That's our top 10 list for today. Pretty cool list. Thanks for the suggestion. I can't remember who suggested it, but I did jot it down and sent the list to Roy. So this is interesting. I think you'll enjoy this. But again, let me again give you a lyrical content warning. This is for adults only. Do not listen to this with impressionable young people in the car. Don't do that. Don't do it. Some of the filthiest stuff you'll ever hear in your life is on this list. If you have ideas for the top 10 list, reach out, let us know. Best way to do that is to find us on social media. I'm on all forms social media at Scout Steve R. And Roy at Dogmatic67, DAWGMATIC67. Roy is the keeper and distributor of the list. He got a little bit behind. We got caught up last night. Kind of hurts our numbers, you know, because we like to get them out there fresh for you. But, you know, Roy's working a different job these days, and so they don't have quite as much time. That and the fact that Roy is getting up in age. He's really slowing down, really, really, really slowing down. And so we have to be sensitive to that. Roy and I had a chance to tour around Polk's house over the weekend. Super cool. You never get a chance to do that. You should. He's not doing as many tours these days. He told me he's about toured out. But occasionally he'll do one, you know. And so we were happy to do that. It's always good to hang out with Roy and Missy. And it's always good when they come to town. Even Maroon Mary went with us. Those of you that know Mary, she also was able to attend the tour. And happy to set that up for them. And you know, we look forward to doing some more fun stuff in the future. But Roy is my friend, even when he falls behind on these lists. He was his idea to put the list together on Spotify. And little did we know it'd make him a minor celebrity in the Mississippi State fan base. So congratulations, Roy. Thanks for your contributions to the show. And as always, Top 10 List brought to you by CloseWithBlair.com. All right, next segment of the show brought to you by Campus Bookmart, a Starkvillian institution. When you're looking for Mississippi State merchandise, look no further than Campus Bookmart. They can get you accommodated whether you're looking for apparel or gift ideas, or just, you know, you've got that little area in the town, in the house, you got some wall space, you'd love to put up some maroon and white. They can accommodate you there. They can help you fill that need. It's very important that you do that, right? You need to rep the brand wherever you go. Well, that's a new M over S cap, a new Mississippi State basketball shirt, maybe a football sweatshirt. You're going to need those soon. Yeah, it's true. And, Mom, everybody likes unexpected Mississippi State gifts. So when you're in town, take everybody by there. Let them pick out something cool they can wear to the game. And go up there and buy that for them. And it's not an early Christmas present. It's because I love you present, right? We're not going to skip out on Christmas because you spend a little money in September. Yeah, yeah. We're wise to the game. All that understood. If you can't make it to town, visit them on the World Wide Web, courtesy of Al Gore's internet at campusbookmart.net. And by being a loyal Boneyard listener, we'll give you a phrase that pays. That's BSR, which stands for Beautiful Steve Robertson. That gets you free shipping on all orders over $75. Any order less than $75, absolutely incomplete. All right, let's talk a little bit more about the history of Mississippi State and Florida. Gators are 34-19-2 all time. And you say, Steve, we got 19 wins. Yeah, we do. There was a time Florida wasn't so good, and we were. And they got a one-game winning streak, of course. The game that sticks in the craw of everybody, right, is that 2018 game against Florida. Dan Mullen returns to town. We had just lost to Kentucky. And you're like, you know what? We were so bad at Kentucky, but if we beat Dan in Florida, all is kind of forgiven. And we lose that game 13-6. We brought Jim Moorhead in. A lot of people were telling us he was an upgrade offensively and that kind of stuff. He wasn't. Bulldogs had arguably the best defense in the country that year. So our defense gave us a chance to win the game. And ultimately, it was Jonathan Abram got a little bit banged up on a play, had to come out. We insert a backup safety who was a walk-on. And what do you know, Dan Mullen and those guys dial up a trick play for a double pass. and score the only touchdown in the game and ultimately win 13-6. And of course, Osiris Mitchell, who had some big moments for us, had a big drop in that game that could have changed everything. Could have. But that's a game that you guys remember. That's the last time State and Florida played. So it's been 6 years since we played them. And even that game was a bit of a rarity. It's the first time we had played Florida since 2010. And, you know, 2010, of course, we go down into the swamp and we beat them. Their kicker got hurt. They had to have a punter attempt a game-time field goal late. Chris White, K.J. Wright, having big, big games for Mississippi State. The Bulldogs win that game 10-7. And that was one of those moments where you felt like, hey, Dan Mullen is the right guy for us. We're going places. We may not be able to keep him, but at the same time, too, we're going to be in a much better situation. It's a football program, and we get ready to hire the next guy because Dan Mullen's going to win here. Winning in a swamp was big. Huge. Now, the year before, and again, this is back the scheduling format you had the home and home. In 2009, Dan Mullen's first year here, Florida and Tim Tebow come in. Now, they win the game 29-19. We really struggled to get things going offensively. That Gator defense was legit. That's the Jonathan Banks game. Jonathan Banks with two pick sixes. Of course, the one, the 100-yarder, the 99-yarder, you know, where he cuts in front, Corey Bloomfield gets a hand on the ball, and the next thing you know, Banks has got it, sprinting down the field, cuts back across the grain. The last block comes from Chris White, who runs down there and throws a block, kind of shields it away. Banks scores, and of course, later he scores to kind of keep us in the game. We lose 29-19. And if we'd been able to mount any offense, it might have been a different story that year for the 2009 Gators, but a very memorable game. Going back to 2004, that was a very difficult year at Mississippi State, kind of like what we're in now. We knew we didn't have a lot of talent. We had a coaching staff trying to get their legs under them. We'd lost to Maine that year, and then we bounced back. And Jarius Norwood's kind of shining moment at that point in his career. Of course, he had a pretty big game in the Egg Bowl. But in 2004, Jarius Norwood, a run to glory that led Mississippi State to a 38-31 win over Florida here in Starkville. One of the most unexpected wins in the history of the program. Now, Ron Zook ultimately gets fired after this, thus coining the phrase, croomed. So-and-so got croomed. I think there were three coaches that year that got croomed after a loss to Mississippi State. Maybe you've forgotten. But one of the most improbable wins in school history, without any question. 2001, this is a game that sticks in the craw, too. You know, we had beaten them in 2000, and I'm going to get that in just a second. And we kind of embarrassed them. And so we get ready to go play them in 2001, and we're struggling, and we got to go to the swamp. And our buddy Demetri Wright got absolutely exposed in this game. And Florida beats us 52-0. We knew Florida was going to be great that year. We thought we might have our hands full going to Gainesville. But we thought, hey, maybe if we have a good year, we can see them again in Atlanta on a neutral field. Then we'll see what happens. No, none of that happened. It was a revenge game for Florida because in 2000, Mississippi State actually played against three different quarterbacks from Florida. This is the third and 57 game, or fourth and 57, whatever you want to deem it. They had a center, Zach Zadelphus, I think was his name. He snapped the ball over Jesse Palmer's head a couple times. We made some big plays. You know, Brock Berlin came in this game too. He was supposed to be the great big, the next big thing at Florida. And it was a visor-throwing day for the legendary Steve Spurrier. Rex Grossman plays in the game, gets hurt, has a bit of an ankle injury. Jesse Palmer comes in, can't really rally the troops. And then Brock Berlin comes in. Really, the game was over, and they scored a couple of garbage touchdowns. I think it was like 38-20 maybe, something like that. But State had really put this game away, and Brock Berlin comes in, ultimately transferred to Miami. It was a product out of Louisiana. A lot of people – he was the number one quarterback in the country that year out of Calvary. And a lot of people thought LSU would get him, and ultimately goes to Florida to play in the fun and gun. But a huge win, 2000, a pretty interesting year for Mississippi State. Had some very big marquee wins, one of the last great years for Jackie Sherrill, of course. We go back to 1992. Shane Matthews and those guys were great. They thought some big things were happening for them. It's a Thursday night game, one of the most electric atmospheres we'd seen at Davis-Wade Stadium at the time. Absolutely destroy Florida, 30-6. Shane Matthews, a Mississippi guy, chose to go out of state. Jackie Sherrill and the Bulldogs got a bit of revenge. It worked out well for Shane, though. Played a lot of years in the National Football League. But very significant win in the Jackie Sherrill era. Made us feel like, you know, hey, we're at a point now, kind of like that Dan Mullen game. It's like, hey, we can now compete with anybody. We don't have to look at a schedule and just kind of write these things off. Rocky Falker back in 1986, we win that game 16-10 in Starkville. A bit of a snooze fest. But I remember, you know, we were putting together a good year. And then Florida comes in, and Florida was Florida, right? And we hadn't beaten Florida since 1981. They had beaten us four consecutive times, and most of those games really weren't competitive. I know some of the scores are within a couple touchdowns, but really Florida controlled everything with us. And then Rocky upsets them, and we really thought, hey, we're going somewhere, right? We thought the Bulldogs were going to have a big year. We ultimately ended up finishing 6-5 that year. But you beat Tennessee and Florida in the same year and don't go to a bowl game. Yeah, it's true. There was a stretch there, though. You know, we started looking, you know, back at the years. But, you know, back in the, you know, the late Raph Sassy years and then the Alan McKean years, we kind of dominated the stretch here. From 1936 to 1942, Mississippi State won every game. In those combined wins, let's see here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. In those six wins, we limited Florida to a combined 32 points. Yeah. We had four shutouts during that stretch. Most points they scored came in 1937 when State wins 14-13 here in Starkville. There were some years we played those guys in Tampa. We've kind of played them all over. Played them in Jacksonville, Montgomery, Tampa, Gainesville, Starkville, of course, Gainesville, Jackson, Mississippi. You know, we've played them in a variety of places. Even played them in Orlando back in 91. You know, we sell that home game. I'm so glad we've graduated beyond that. But it has been an interesting series. And probably the difference between the two, you know, you say, you know, Steve, they've won 15 more than us. But, we've beaten them more than we have some other SEC teams, and it's a team we don't play with a great frequency. But we have had some very memorable wins against Florida. Maybe tomorrow's another one. Maybe. Or excuse me, Saturday. I forget what day it is. When you work every day, it all runs together after a while. But again, I think when you begin to look at this series, you know, one of the things that we haven't had a lot of are the shootouts. We really haven't had those, right? There have been some games where State's kind of gotten on them. We've won a close one. You know, it was a defensive game. We talk about that 0-4 game kind of being a shootout, but really I think it was, you know, one of those games, too, where I think the Bulldogs just weren't going to be denied. And there wasn't hardly anybody at the game. There wasn't. And why would there be? A lot of people expect us to get blown out. But it is very significant to me that we have had some of these first-year head coaches, you know, first- or second-year head coaches that have given Florida a lot of trouble. And I don't know why that is. I can't put a finger on it. Maybe it's because Florida comes in and thinks, you know what, hey, it's Mississippi State. Hey, their longest winning streak in the series is 5 games. Ours is 7, that stretch from 36 to 42. And again, that's the end of the Sassy era and the beginning of the Alan McKean era. We had a good run. Highlight a couple of those games too. The biggest loss in the series is 52-0 for us. The biggest win was 30-6. It's interesting, you know, kind of how it all goes down here. But with the new scheduling format, we're going to play Florida with greater regularity, as they tell us that with the new scheduling format, every student athlete that plays 4 years at their institution is going to have a chance to play in every SEC venue before they're done. And that's probably a good thing. But I still go back to the fact, like this year we're not playing Kentucky, which is probably a good year to play them. We're not playing LSU, which may be a good year to play them. Not playing Auburn, which may be a good year to play them. You know, so it's like, hey, the scheduling format, it, it's just Mississippi State luck in some respects, right? When these teams rotate off, they kind of have a down year. We're having one too, don't get me wrong. But instead of us having to play those guys, we get Georgia and Texas. Then, you know, we have some teams that are at the end of a talent cycle, and here we're going to get pick up two playoff contenders. We've got the number one, number two team in the country, you know, coming up here in the next couple of weeks. You know, it'll be fun to make those trips, but I don't think those games are going to be nearly as fun. But it's a job for us. You know, it's not just about, hey, let's go get a free hot dog and just take a trip and go you know, check out and see the sights. I mean, you know, we're absolutely going out there looking to do a job, win or lose. We're going to cover those games. You know, it's not a hobby for us. It's not. And I'm very grateful that we can afford to get out and kind of go travel and be your eyes and ears. We take that responsibility very, very seriously. But before we get to that point, my hope is that we can make this Florida game one of those games that maybe in the next couple of years we're talking about, hey, remember that? We kind of struggled against Arizona State, really struggled against Toledo, and yet we found a way to beat Florida. And I can assure you the people of the Florida Gator Nation are cheering for us this weekend. They're cheering for us to win the game to kind of put an end to their misery. They are ready for Billy Napier to leave. And so that's a difficult situation to be in when you're rooting against your own team because you think that a coaching change is for the betterment of your program. And a lot of times that's correct. But we have been in those positions before. We were in that situation last year. And I remember sitting in College Station, Texas, watching Marcel Reed, a third-team quarterback, run all over us against Texas A&M, a game that we jumped out to a 7-0 lead because of a Xavion Thomas kickoff return. I thought, okay, we're ready to go. We're ready to go. These guys aren't going to be able to score on us with that regularity with third-team quarterback. They ran all over us. And it was miserable, man. And I remember sitting there, and I went on the message board, and I said, this cannot continue. And so at that point, you know, we're on the clock. And if we didn't make a change when we did, you know, I both know nobody would have come to that Southern Miss game. And those of you that decided to come, it was great. It was a great atmosphere. You came to the Egg Bowl, too. It didn't work out the way we wanted it to. But, you know, if we don't fire Zach Arnett last year, there's nobody at those games. And I don't think we play nearly as hard. I think Greg Knox and that staff wrote a debt of gratitude, you know, for coming in and getting the young men ready to play. And so I think Florida feels like they're in the same situation. It's like, hey, we know this thing is going to happen. And I think Jeremy Foley is so famously credited with saying, you know, what has to be done eventually is better off done now. It's our word to that effect. You know, there's no point putting off the inevitable. If you know you're going to have to make the change, then make the change. And I know people would say, well, you know, there's so much season left, Steve. You know, if they lose this ballgame, they're 1-3. I don't know if you guys have looked at this. We've talked about their schedule, right? They lose this ball game, they're 1-3. And even if they win, they're 2-2. Guys, they're hosting Central Florida next weekend. Have you seen what Gus Malzahn and Central Florida have done this year? Have you paid attention at all to this? And maybe because we're just so acutely aware of what's going on with us, you know, we don't always kind of pay attention to what's happening around the country. But Gus Malzahn and the Knights out there are 3-0, and they are putting up huge offensive numbers. They won a shootout last weekend at TCU, 35-34. That was their lowest point total of the year. Now, of course, they played New Hampshire and Sam Houston. But Gus Malzahn has kind of been known as a bit of an offensive guru. Hadn't always been considered a great head coach, but he did play for a national championship at Auburn. But you start working through this thing with Florida. Think about the fans that live in the great state of Florida. They lose that game to Central Florida. Let's say Billy Napier wins this week or even loses this week and lives to fight another week. They get beat by Central Florida and potentially embarrassed by Central Florida. It doesn't go into the week. It doesn't. Now, what's interesting is before they play Central Florida, they have the open date. And so if you start thinking of this from a leadership standpoint, if you know that Billy Napier's not going to be your coach next year, no matter what happens in Starkville on Saturday, you got to make the move then. You make the move, win or lose, and I understand the optics behind it because you have the open day to kind of prepare for Central Florida. give your interim coach and that staff a chance to make some changes, and then you play Central Florida. And I think there are some people that kind of think, hey, this is going to happen. Like, if State wins, I think Napier's fired on Sunday. And then that gives the staff 2 weeks to prepare for Central Florida. If they win, and then Strickland and the Board of Trustees and the caretakers of the Florida program say, okay, let's ride it out, and then you get beat by Central Florida, I think that's it. I don't think Billy Napier survives the season. But let's look ahead. After Central Florida, they got to go to Tennessee. And Heupel has that offense absolutely humming. We got to go up there too. Then they host Kentucky. All right, not a great Kentucky team, but how defeated mentally is Florida going to be by the time Kentucky gets there? Kentucky's probably thinking, when they get there, we got a chance. And Kentucky may need that to get a bowl win, get a bowl berth. After the Kentucky game, they get number one Georgia and then Texas. And it depends on what poll you want to use. But, you know, the top two teams in the country are up next. And then LSU comes in, and then Ole Miss, and then you're at Florida State. Not a game on the schedule you look at right now and say, hey, they'll definitely win. All right, final segment of the show brought to you by the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. You're looking to bring a group to Starkville, and how many times have you dreamed of doing that? Man, wouldn't it be amazing to get everybody together under one roof? Whether it be college roommates or friends or family. Maybe it's a girls' weekend, a guys' weekend. Maybe it's a ball game weekend. Maybe you've got some vacation time and you're like, you know what, I just kind of want to get out a little bit. We'll go stay midweek at the Stark Vegas Clubhouse and come enjoy the better part of Starkville when it's not a game day weekend. You know, lines to get in restaurants aren't quite as crowded. You know, you can enjoy your meal. You won't be, you know, suffering anxiety thinking, man, we got to get out of here and get our check and get onto the ballpark, right? It's a different scenario, right? So Google the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. When you do, their Facebook page will come up for you. You can look through the pictures and all the amenities are available to you and your guests, like the full-service kitchen, the wet bar, the fire pit outside, that incredible back porch area. So it's a great place to just kind of sit and kind of reflect, watch a sunset maybe. It's great. Five bedrooms, two bath. It's the old renovated clubhouse, the old country club, very neatly positioned, 5 minutes away from the Mississippi State campus, and you get some peace and quiet out there. You know, it's not like you come in, you got to go stay in a hotel, and you get people, you know, closing doors all hours of the night and things of that nature. It's just a chance for you to enjoy Starkville and kind of get away a little bit. And even if you live in Starkville, maybe it's a staycation type deal, right? Let's just go get it and spend a couple nights. Maybe you're bringing a work crew to town rather than go get five hotel rooms and have everybody spread out all over the country or all over the county out there. You can have everybody right there and work, have some common areas to work, and everybody's got their own areas they can retreat to in the evening to kind of have their own time. When you Google the Stark Vegas Clubhouse, the booking options are going to pop up for you. Airbnb, VRBO. And then if you want to save some money, I can help you do so. Book through the Evolve website. Evolve website. Promo code BSR10. That's Beautiful Steve Robertson 10. The number 10, 10. Gets you 10% off your stay. And that could be a very substantial amount of savings considering how long you're staying. I think the best place to stay in the Golden Triangle is the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. We plan to stay at the Stark Vegas Clubhouse at some point and bring all the kids in the town and be able to just kind of hang out and stay and have all of my kids and my grandkids under one roof. And that way mom can get up and make those cinnamon rolls in the morning, right? Wouldn't that be great? I bet you can smell them right now. Yeah, you won't be there, but maybe you can get your own mom to make you cinnamon rolls in the morning at the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. All right, before we get out of here, let's talk a little bit about recruiting. I mentioned baseball recruiting is going well. Picked up a couple of big commitments here in the last couple of days. It's been a good week. Now, of course, it's a different dynamic of baseball recruiting right now because of the fact that you know, kids now can take official visits as juniors. You know, typically, everybody would make their decision and then take, you know, just the one visit. But now, you know, players can get out and go. Now, Landon Brown committed yesterday. And he has taken one visit. He had visits set up, I think, for Arkansas, Texas, Oklahoma State, and a couple others. He came to Mississippi State and said, you know what, this is where I want to be. Canceled the rest of his visits. committed to Mississippi State, said he and his family knew as soon as they got here this was home. And it wasn't just the sweet charm of Starkville, which they loved, but it was also the facilities here, the commitment to baseball here. Very, very significant. Of course, we picked up one of the top pitchers in the Midwest in Becker Dawn earlier in the week. And that's a significant commitment, too. And so, this class is coming together. I don't think you're going to see more than maybe a dozen high school kids in the class because, we've got to think about the roster size next year, dropping from 40 to 34. That's something to kind of consider, too. We got to recruit differently. But we also have to allocate some spots for the portal so we can get out there and make some things happen in the summertime. Postseason, we get down postseason, we got to get to work in the portal and add some players. And, of course, this year, a lot of your roster is going to be dependent on how well we did in the portal. We did pretty well. Could have done better. We did pretty well. And there are some people out there, obviously, that are always going to be negative about whatever happens at Mississippi State, even though they claim to love us. Now, on the football side of things, I don't think we're going to take a lot more high school commitments. And one of the reasons that I say that, guys, you see it yourself. We've got to get bigger, faster, and stronger. We have to, especially in the trenches. And so let's just kind of be honest about this. A high school kid is not really going to help us next year kind of fix a defensive line. A high school kid not going to help us next year in the offensive line. We got to go out and get some players, some from the portal, some from the junior college ranks. And listen, I get it. A lot of these junior college players, it takes them about half a year to kind of acclimate to life and times in the Southeastern Conference. That's why a Division I bounce back is always a good thing because they've already been through all this stuff before. So it's not a shock to the system, right? They understand what it takes to kind of have that workload. I think you all would agree with that. I mean, even Pernell McPhee, as great as he was, and as long as he played in National Football League, he needed about half a year to kind of figure it out. Same for Montez Sweat. Tez, I think, led the nation in quarterback hurries, but he was always about a half step slow getting the quarterback his first year here until maybe the last three or four games. And so that's always an issue. I do think offensive linemen and interior defensive linemen are a little more equipped to handle that. The speed of the game is just much different. For guys who play on the edge and guys that are skill position players. But I do think, again, Tyler Lockhart is going to be a defensive player from the high school ranks. Is a Bulldog. I have said that for a year now. Had a chance to go see him last week. Excited about him. And I think he is going to be a Bulldog very, very soon. I feel like I've been saying that for 2 months now. But I had somebody tell me that he's already made his decision and he just hadn't announced it. And that's, that and 50 cents to get you a cup of coffee at the D-Lo truck stop. But I think what you're going to see is some new names pop up. Now, of course, if Caleb Cunningham wants to come, you're going to take him no matter when he wants to come. But at this point, I don't think Mississippi State is much of a factor. And I think a lot of it's because of the fact that we have not really given him a lot of reasons to be celebratory about this offense. I think the offense is going to be fine in time. But when you see what Alabama's doing offensively and you see what Ole Miss is doing offensively, and it's really those three schools that are kind of in the mix there, that's a part of the equation. And so we really haven't given him a reason to turn his head. And this summer things were going great, and we thought, okay, we just got to get a product on the field and kind of show him that he can come be a star in this offense, potentially get to the National Football League, and we have not done that yet. So outside of Caleb Cunningham, Tyler Lockhart, a couple other guys, maybe. I don't think there's going to be a lot of high school guys left in the 2025 class. And we are expecting a commitment, as I mentioned, top of the show. That still hasn't happened. My hope is it gets worked out tonight. We get that thing done. And sometimes these guys get a little bit of cold feet. Sometimes when you get down to the precipice of a commitment, you start thinking, do I really want to do this? Because I don't want to decommit. Once I make a commitment, I want to stick with it. And so there is a young man that we're waiting on right now. We'll see. Again, the story's ready. We're just waiting on him to announce before we publish the story. That's kind of the promise that we make to young people when they make their commitment. I mean, both of these baseball commitments, I had the story done. We let them tweet it out or post to their Instagram. Seeing more and more young people choosing to do that on Instagram or add to their story and things of that nature. And so That's something. But I think what you're going to see over the course of the next few weeks, and I think with the open date coming up, you'll probably once we get through the open date, we get a chance to get really kind of get back out there and really evaluate some players. You're going to see some new names emerge. You're going to see some junior college names. And, of course, you know, once the portal opens, it's going to be a mad dash. And what I continue to hear is that we're in a much better shape financially to kind of prepare for NIL. That's not to say you shouldn't give. Really, the only way out of this is through recruiting. And unfortunately, now NIL is tied to recruiting. They said it wouldn't be, but it is. You know, this is not what they promised us. But it's the world in which we live at this point. And I think that's an important aspect of things. We at Mississippi State have got to be willing to pivot. And there are a lot of people out there that will say, hey, you know, Steve, I just don't agree with it. Whether you agree with it or not, this is what's happening. And acceptance is not approval. We have to accept that this is the dimensions that we have to kind of work through things. It doesn't mean we have to like it. You know, and I've heard people say, well, you know, so-and-so doesn't like recruiting in the portal. I don't think anybody does. You know, the only thing that you love about recruiting in the portal is you find out pretty quickly and you get those guys on campus. So it's not like a regular recruitment where a guy commits and you got to wait. You know, these guys come in, most of them on the football side commit on their visit. It's not the case in baseball. They do take their visits in baseball and commit at a later date. Football, you've got a much shorter window. Because, yeah, your regular season ends there around the weekend of Thanksgiving, and next thing you know, the portal's open. You know, they've got basically just a few weeks to take visits and then begin to make their preparations to transfer to their new school. And so they're ready to go much quicker. It's a much different dynamic. And I think that's an important part of all this is we have to kind of understand this is where we are. And we have to embrace this brave new world. You know, I don't like a lot of the things about this either. You know, the one thing I do like about the NIL is that it has diminished a lot of the dark money, right? There's a lot of things out there over the years that, you know, people would need inducements to try to get somebody to like in their school. And so my hope is this will kind of lessen NCAA cases, which in turn lessens NCAA sanctions, which can be absolutely crippling. It's kind of like I said, hey, if you guys are going to pay players under the table, we're just going to make it legal. And then as a result, it's no longer against the rules as long as you do it within the guidelines. But the guidelines are ever-changing. You remember in the beginning, it's like, hey, they had to be paid fair market value. Well, how do you determine somebody's value? And some people out there have kind of built a following out that, you know, and of course, it's so incredibly arbitrary, right? And I've had some people tell me it's like they've had players that have shown up wanting meetings. It's like, hey, well, I saw on this website that they said that I'm worth $100,000. You guys are only paying me $20,000. Where's my other $80,000? I may be able to get that on the open market in NIL. And, of course, they can't because so much of that is just kind of made up. It's true. People don't want to admit that. You're like, hey, well, I saw so-and-so got X million dollars. And, you know, even we're going to learn a lot about all this with that Jaden Rashada case. And it's so interesting that Jaden Rashada – he was kind of the first guy to have the big public deal. And ultimately, he leaves Florida, ironically. And now there's the lawsuit kind of alleging these people kind of were in breach of contract. And so some of those documents are going to be made public. And we're going to see kind of how it all went to be. That's important for us to understand. I believe in transparency. And the truth of the matter is, I think, honestly, that all this should be made public. You say, but Steve, it's a private transaction. Well, is it? Is it? Should it be a private transaction? I think, you know, maybe the best thing for us to do is have a collective bargaining agreement. And then, you know, these deals are out there. Maybe you just give everybody a salary cap. Okay, here's what you can spend on football. And if you want to give all that money to one guy, you can. If you want to spread it out among your team, you can. You want to give everybody an equal share, that's up to you. But here's your money. Okay, you got $2.5 million, $3 million a year for football. You know, you got $1 million for baseball, a couple million for basketball. I mean, I don't know the differential and all that stuff or how you disperse the funds. But I think we're trending towards something like that. And you say, hey, well, so-and-so signed for this or signed for that. And not always, you know, pro contracts are not always, you know, the terms of those deals not always disclosed. Of course, some things kind of leak out there. But, you know, those are private entities. Many of the schools involved in NIL are funded by state tax dollars. And so as a result, I think one could make a case that many of these people that are involved in NIL are kind of conducting business, state business. And so I think there needs to be a higher level of transparency and even some scrutiny in some respects. But all that I understood, a lot of what you hear from NIL isn't true. Even with some of your own players. And there have been people in the past that say, hey, this person got, you know, $100,000, $150,000, and you find out later they got $15,000, you know. And so a lot of those stories out there are kind of like the big bad wolf. You know, you hear these yarns and everybody begins to think, well, that's just kind of how the way things are. That's not really always the case. That's important to understand. But there is a tremendous amount of NIL fatigue out there. And I do believe help is on the way. We get this house settlement thing done. They're going to open the way for schools to kind of fund NIL. And I've said from the outset of this that basically what needs to happen is, they need to be able to come up with a deal where young people are paid through the university by virtue of the TV deal. Maybe you negotiate a bigger TV deal and then you in turn pass those savings on to your earnings on the players. But it's a different world. It is. And there's so many of us that say, hey, well, when I was in school, you know, things have changed since you were in school. You know, it's not all sock hops these days. It's just kind of the reality of how things are. So whether we like it or not, we got to change. Now, the flip side of it is, and I'm excited about this, you guys may have seen that they've released more of the men's basketball schedule. I think we have done a good job on the NIL side for men's basketball. And I think we're going to field a really good team. And guys, we're just under 7 weeks away from packing the hump again. I'm excited about it. I know you guys are as well. And of course, there's still a few more things I got to figure out with the schedule. You know, we've got to get times and things like that. But let me encourage you, too, that for your entertainment dollar, I think the men's basketball team this year is going to give you some dividends. I truly do. And, we met with players some time ago, and I can tell you there is a kind of a quiet confidence in that group. And you know what Josh Hubbard can do, and there's more pieces around him now, so people aren't going to be able to just kind of collapse on Josh and make somebody else beat us. Chris Jans has got a few more, bullets in the gun this time around, pardon the pun. But I'm excited about it. I think you guys should be as well. And I know this football season is probably going to be something we're going to have to kind of lean on each other and kind of endure more so than enjoy. But I think men's basketball is going to kind of be a palate cleanser in some respects. That's how I feel. The women's side, we're still kind of figuring this thing out, you know. I'm eager to see. You know, Sam Purcell has had a chance now to kind of get, his players in. I think Sam's a great coach. I really do. I know some other people's opinions may vary about that, but I think Sam Purcell is a guy that is very, very exuberant about the job that he has at Mississippi State. And last year, obviously, didn't end the way we hoped it would. But hope springs eternal. And I'm eager to see what we do in non-conference on the women's side. I mean, of course, the thing that I've learned about college athletics is there's probably not a bigger gap between the haves and the have-nots than there is in women's basketball. Because, I mean, sometimes these women's basketball teams get absolutely destroyed. I mean, it's just, the scoring margins at times are just absolutely out of control. But I hope that we're on the business end of those beatings rather than the recipient end. Hey, if you hadn't done so, come float with us at True Rest Float Spa of Starkville. People ask me all the time, Steve, why do you float? Well, it's the only time my mind is quiet. When I get up every morning, I'm wide open. I mean, as soon as my eyes spring open, I am like shot out of a cannon. Until the time that I sit down at night and watch Big Bang Theory reruns with the wife, that's what I do. And I haven't floated in about a week and a half, and I can tell. I can tell in the quality of my sleep, and I can tell really in the quality of my irritability. One thing that I tell Dana all the time is that the main thing about floating is it kind of puts me in a mood where my response to negative stimulus is appropriate. Instead of me feeling the need to kind of lash out, I just like, yeah, it's cool. It's fine. I floated in Columbus, Ohio the night before signing day. And I was so stressed out. And then after I floated, she said, how you feel, babe? I said, like, none of that stuff matters. It's all going to be okay. We had all our work done. We're ready to go. It was incredible to get out and float. And maybe you're a person that suffers from chronic pain or anxiety or something like that, depression. They're doing some amazing studies now about, how floating helps people in early recovery too. You know, people that are trying to kick a habit and how it helps them deal with anxiety and deal with cravings. And there's a lot of people too that we've got a lot of people from, from the Air Force base that come, military injuries and things like that. One thing I want to tell you too, if you are an active military member or retired, if you're former military, and you can prove it, we will let you float for free on the 11th of the month. And that's every month. Because we want to support our men and women in armed forces and, of course, those that have served. So on the 11th of each and every month, you got to set an appointment, right? You got to let us know ahead of time. And so you can call 662-268-7601 and say, hey, I'd like to float. I'm former military or current military, active military, however you want to label yourself. And of course, we got to see some kind of documentation. But you come float for free. How cool is that? And if you're a person out there that maybe you live an active lifestyle, and we had some friends recently that from out of state that were in for the ball game and said, I just want to try it, and I've always heard about it. And they walked out and said, now I wish I lived closer. I'd take advantage of that discount program and be a member. And you certainly should be. It's worth it. And it's not just for women, too. There's a lot of people that think, hey, they see the name SPA, and they think, okay, I'm going to have my toes up in the air and get my toes painted. No, this is a chance for you to come rest and relax, and men and women. And what's so fun to me is I'll see, like, there'll be like a mom, and she'll have her daughter with her, and then the husband is kind of like a tag-along, and he'll have this look on his face like, I can't believe I'm doing this. And then when they come out, he's the first one to look at me and say, that was amazing. If you're having issues, this may work for you too. And so I encourage you to come out. And you can download the True Rest app. You can set an appointment online. Come be a part of it. Update on the dude too. October 12th, thereabouts. Once we get a little closer, we'll have a better idea. So we're less than a month out from the dude being released. And we do expect the remaining inventory to go very quickly. So the best bet for you is to pre-order. And that's an important part of this thing, too. Go to DutyNobleBook.com, and all of my sports titles are there, too, and When the Bottom Falls. And you can get signed copies of the book right there, so you don't have to run me down at a book signing. But of all the books that I've written, this is probably the one that I'm most proud of because of the research required to kind of pull this thing together. And a lot of it, it's research that hadn't been done in over 100 years. Those things are important to me. And this is one of those titles that I think when I look back at my life, I'm going to be really, really glad that it was my name on the book. It's been a joy to put this thing together. And I look forward to you guys reading that. And always come join us over at jeanspage.com. As I mentioned, we want to be your source for Mississippi State news, even if you're not a member. And if you frequented Jean's Page yesterday, just kind of a few things to look at here. All three of the player availabilities yesterday, we had three players. The videos you can watch for free of those press conference situations. The transcripts and articles also you can read for free. Had an article, everything that Florida coach Billy Napier said about Mississippi State, his press conference. Also had a little bit of first look at Florida, kind of breaking down where they are, what the injuries look like, things of that nature. And then we also had dogs in the show update. We had update on some visitors coming this weekend. And so a lot of that information is free. And we'd love for you to come and be a part of that and maybe ultimately subscribe someday. We do run some incentives. Right now you can get 30% off the annual subscription price. It'd be a great Christmas gift too. And that's one thing too about True Rest too I would push too is you can buy gift cards for somebody else. How about that? I've got a student up there, or I've got a wife that I think would benefit, or a husband. You can buy gift cards. You can buy multiple floats as a package at a discount because we're cool like that. Let's get out of here. I'll see you guys on Friday, but until next time, let's all live our lives in a way we make more friends than enemies, and people can see a difference in the way we live.
Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Gram laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Gram keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit lgusa.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Gram laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.